Let's get this party started.
This is Ghetto.
Broadcasting live from the studios of AM 570.
It's on a website.
This is FNA.
Man, get out my way and watch out as I come.
I am a god, now what?
Why don't you get out of that jumpsuit and let me smack that fat ass?
That's a scary crew.
As far as the product goes,
voice of a new generation, man. You guys are the young guys.
Are really at the top of their games.
The two of them had something in common.
We bring you Radio Ecstasy.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Broadcasting live from the studios of AM 570.
FNA.
Let it happen.
This is the FNA Podcast.
Friday edition of the FNA Podcast. It's Kevin Figures and Adam Alston with y'all.
That's going my on? Pleasure.
That's right, to bring you guys the show twice a week.
He's at KFig1 on Twitter. I'm at follow Adam A on Twitter, at FNA Show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Coming up later in the show, we'll get to your phone calls on the Talk Ez Hotline, 949-478-1197.
You want to talk some shit?
That is the phone number. I believe we have at least one.
We do have a voicemail to get to for sure. That came in earlier this week.
We've somewhat stumbled after having like a month straight of three calls.
Yeah, a great
every
run.
Show. It was a great run. The fuck happened?
Oh, no. You guys just petered out. What the hell? You guys petered out like the Dodger bets. Did something happen last night?
Yeah.
Maybe we should get to that first
Things
off.
Change.
You know? Yeah. Cue up the Bee Gees. They're staying alive. We got one of our favorite guests.
Hold my balls. Yeah. Get that high voice.
One of our favorite guests coming up here first, Adam. Let's not waste any time and get right to it.
Phone's ringing, dude.
Thank you, Donnie.
Well, with Dodgers fans more obsessive about their love for their team than the way Joe gets about you and the show you, well, you need to know if this season will end with disappointment or if they really are a team of destiny ready to come back on Atlanta for the second straight year, down 28-3 or 3-1 in this case. So we must bring back in a man with all the answers to at least the questions that are answerable. It's Eric Steven, king of Dodgers coverage on the websites True Blue LA and SB Nation, and follow him at Eric Steven with a PH on Twitter for puns on runs and instant info and analysis as the game unfolds live. Eric, how are you?
Pretty good. The last 3 days were something else at Dodger Stadium. So it's a lot of ups and downs, but they're still here. So weird year, man.
And something else that happened yesterday: Joe Kelly leaves with an injury. He's out for the rest of the playoffs now. First order of business, I guess. How do they replace him? Who's going to be the guy?
So Dave Roberts last night made it sound like. Well, he said David Price is at the top of the list among the pitchers they're considering. I know, like, Mitch White is among the people, like, in the, you know, on the taxi. I'm not sure if Andre Jackson is around, but I don't know if they would necessarily choose him. I was thinking about Victor Gonzalez, who kind of had a down second year this year. I don't know if he's around, but I would imagine he's at least in the discussion. You know, if they just want another lefty guy, he was in the minors the last month or so of the season. But, like, yeah, it sounds like it's going to be David Price. And the thing is, you know, he was dealing with elbow soreness in September and didn't pitch for a few weeks and then sort of pitched a little bit down the stretch. But his numbers the last, like, month and a half or so are just kind of ordinary. But, you just wonder, I'm sure they have a good handle on how he feels physically. So, you know, if he's able to pitch, it's the role probably he's stepping into. He's not going to be – nobody's going to, like, step in – he's not going to step into, like, the Joe Kelly, you know, smoke jumper role, middle of the game, weird spot, need someone to get out of an inning. That was sort of Joe Kelly's thing. And I'm not sure if Price is going to do that, but at least he'll give him an extra arm.
How's his frown face game, at least? Joe Kelly's got that.
Oh, man. So that's the thing. Yeah, Joe Kelly leads the league in that. I've been lobbying Fangraphs to add that on their site, but they still haven't gotten around to it.
Eric Steven joining us on the FNA Podcast. Talk about that offensive explosion last night. And, look, we've talked about it ad nauseum this season with the Dodgers. The feast or famine offense has been mostly famine this entire postseason for them. Did they finally find something last night? Did everything click, especially against their ace in Max Fried? Or, Eric, was it just another one of those nights where the Dodgers' offense and their bats just clicked and they woke up and we'll still be dealing with some of the offensive issues when they head back to Atlanta?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. Part of it was Max Fried. he even said so after the game, like his stuff, he was just kind of off. Like he just did his command was off. The fastball was kind of flat and they were hammering it. And five home runs. Their offense has been weird. Like you would have thought everyone after game three, when they had the comeback win with Cody Bellinger's home run, everyone thought, oh, momentum going into game four is going to be a thing. And the Dodgers went out and scored two runs and fell flat. And then, of course, last night they come and hit five home runs. So, like, yeah, it's just it's been a very weird year. Like, they led the league in runs scored. Fourth straight year they've done that. I went and looked, like, they, you know, in terms of, like, scoring, you know, two runs, three runs, one run, they're at like the bottom of the league in like number of times they did that, but it didn't feel that way, you know, like it just like they had a lot of big games, but then they would like follow that up with, you know, I always wonder if that's just how offense works and we're just, you know,
we got a microscope on.
Yeah, not exactly. I think part of that, and I also think part of this season too was like, had the Giants not been so good and then like the Dodgers chasing them all year, I think there'd be less scrutiny on like every little like mistake they made, because they did win 106 games. I'm not saying they're without flaws, because they have plenty, but it's just been a weird year. Like they did like in the playoffs before last night, they scored two runs or less five out of 10 games before game five last night. So it really has been like, kind of if they hit, they win. And a lot of the talk has been about the pitching, but it's really been almost, almost all on the hitting.
Eric Steven is our guest here from True Blue LA and SB Nation here on the FNA podcast. Eric, if the Dodgers do lose this series, what will be the most regrettable move by Dave Roberts?
It's in this series. I think it's Urias in game two. I get, you know, wanting to use him in certain spots, I would say. And like they did it last year too. They did in most of the cases, not all, he was still sort of stretched out like a starter, although in the NLCS, it was a little different. When he came back and pitching game seven, but he also got a lot of rest before his next start. So this time it was like a between starts thing, which he had never really done. And I think that had like ripple effects both for game two. I mean, that's the other thing. Like wanting to have one of your best pitchers like pitch a key inning, that I sort of understand the rationale. But there's a cost to it, and the cost was Urias was flat in game four, and he gave up five runs. They actually kind of left him out there, I think, prepping for the bullpen game, sort of having him eat some innings in game four too. But, yeah, he just didn't look good. And, like, you would hope that this next time through they let their starters go through with regular rest, because they kind of, you know, did that with everyone at some point this postseason. Scherzer, you know, closed out the NLDS, and then Urias, and then also they had Buehler go on short rest, and he was subpar in his next start out. So this weekend they're both set on regular or extra rest. So like we'll see how that works. But yeah, as far as if they lose, I think that Urias decision in game two, because even as bad as the Dodgers have played at times, the first two games in Atlanta they lost on walk-offs, and they had a lead in the eighth inning of game two. So you come back home up 1-1. The series is a lot different, obviously. So, yeah, that game two thing is going to ripple for a little bit.
You mentioned Max Scherzer there. And I've never heard a manager as retroactively criticized as Dave Roberts, because now that Max Scherzer has a dead arm, people are saying, well, they shouldn't have used him at the end of game five when everyone was celebrating him in that spot. Have you heard the same thing, and does that make sense to you?
Yeah, that one, I'm sort of a sucker for the bringing in the starter. I think it's one of those, like, cool baseball things to like, you know, bringing in the ace pitcher to throw an inning of relief. But that's usually on a team with like a questionable bullpen and you don't have options. And I think this team has a lot of options. Like I was game five, I get it, right? It's winner take all. You're going to go down with your best. You have to win to go on. I don't think the stakes are as high in game two of the NLCS. So that's why that's in a different category. So like it was probably fine, but also, you know, I don't want to pin things solely on all that. Like with Scherzer, like I was fine with the decision. And I just think it just is a thing that happens. Scherzer is also 37, and that's probably why he's pitched like his most innings in I think 3 or 4 years. No, I forgot. 2019 with the deep playoff run, he had a pretty big total, so it wasn't that bad. But everyone's going from 60 games to 162, so this year's kind of weird. Also, like Urias had, he's 75 innings or something over his previous career high in innings. Bueller's about 27 innings higher than his previous career high. I think these guys are just gassed, and it's not necessarily like one decision that's hurting them. It's more like this wear and tear over the entire year, and you have to hope they have something left in the tank a little bit, because they're going to need him.
Yeah, and talking about Max Scherzer, you know, he has the extra day of rest coming in on Saturday, but to your point, he mentioned having a dead arm. Now, usually in the season when that happens, teams will maybe put a guy on the IL for 10 days, skip a start, give him extra rest. Obviously, the Dodgers don't have the luxury to be able to do that. And he's going to speak to the media later today, and so will Dave Roberts, and maybe we'll find out more then. But how long of a leash do you think he'll have if he struggles, like he tends to do, by the way, early on in games, and some of those issues with his arm and fatigue creeps up in the early innings on Saturday?
Yeah, I think they'll just watch him. Like he's still pretty crafty, right? Like even in the game two where he had the dead arm, he struck out 7 in 4 1/3. Like I think Roberts has done a pretty good job in terms of like managing the starters when they start. Like in the wild card game, Scherzer was a little bit off, and that was obviously a winner take all game, so the stakes were high. And he pulled him after 4 1/3. And then he did the same thing in game two. And then, you know, sometimes it just doesn't work. I think in the game one of NLCS, Tony Gonsolin was like supposed to be the bolt guy. And I'm not sure he would have had like a super long run, like 4 innings or something, but it could have went that way. But he like gave up 5 rockets to the 7 batters he faced. And Dave Roberts decided there's no way we're going to let him go through that run of lefties with Rosario and Freeman, so he only faced 7 batters, and then like I think he's been pretty good at reacting to what he sees out there. So, and with Scherzer, like he still knows how to pitch. Like even if he's a little bit limited, I think he can give him a competitive start. So, but if something's off, I think Roberts will have no hesitation to pull him.
Eric, how do you go about divvying up and assigning blame and praise when it's due for Dave Roberts and the front office, because it is a collaborative effort? How do you parcel out who's at fault at times during this playoff run?
Yeah, I checked my Twitter mentions, and it's 100% Dave Roberts, I think. I think that's what it is. No, yeah, that's the weird thing, right? Like, Roberts sort of gets it both ways. When they did the decision to start Corey Knebel as an opener, in that game five of the NLDS, it was a very collaborative decision, but everyone's like, Roberts, this has gone on for a long time too, but Roberts is a puppet of the front office. He's just, they're pulling the strings. He doesn't really have the authority to manage that kind of stuff. And then like in game, he'll make a change or make a move, and they'll be like, damn it, Roberts, what are you thinking? It's like, well, which one is it? Is he making the decisions or is he not? It's one of those things. And I think there's never really any one – usually there's never any one, like, very obvious, like, festering wound type of a reason that something happens one way or the other. So I think, it's all, like, shared in some way. But, yeah, Roberts sure has made some decisions that I think a lot of us disagree with. But there's a lot to go around. Also, like, had Julio Urias simply pitched well in game two and not given up 2 runs, nobody's probably talking at all about any of those decisions right now. So, like, a lot of it's on the players. Like, the players haven't hit. Trey Turner's had a terrible postseason, and he had 3 hits last night. So maybe he's coming out of it. But, man, like, that's rough, you know? Like, Justin Turner was not hitting at all, and then he got hurt, which is obviously unfortunate. But, like, they had a lot of guys who were just not giving them much at all. And I think a lot of it is on the players, but nobody – it's too easy to like, blame – the manager or something, because like it was his fault that they didn't hit or something like that.
Since you just brought it up, with how bad and inept Trey Turner has been at the plate, could this cause the Dodgers to rethink maybe we got to keep Corey Seager around? Could that change their offseason?
Yeah, I kind of wonder about that. So there's a couple factors here. I think you have to assume that the DH is coming to the National League, I would imagine. Obviously, the CBA is up this offseason, so that'll be a thing of discussion. But I think that's kind of the only way it would work. So I definitely think there's probably, like, whatever, like, small chance the Dodgers maybe had of re-signing Seager, it's went up a little bit during the postseason because, you know, with Seager, I mean, without Seager, like, it's a rougher lineup, right? Like, obviously they're missing Muncy. Now they're missing Turner, Justin Turner. And so you just start to lose these pieces and you're thinking, man, how are they going to do this? So it's like maybe more likely, but then it obviously involves a big discussion. If you re-sign Seager, do you just pay him, like, you know, pay him an extra tax and say, look, we're going to move you to third base at some point, maybe not right away, possibly right away, but we're going to pay you to make it worth your while, you know, that kind of a thing. Or do you pay him, or, you know, pay him to play shortstop? You make the tough decision with Trey Turner and say, look, we need you to play second base one more year. You're going to go into free agency. I know you're not happy about it, but we want to win, that kind of thing. Or do you talk to Justin Turner and say, look, we're going to have you mostly as a DH this year, or something like that? I don't know. I don't see the way the Dodgers usually operate. I don't see them having a primary DH. So it'll probably be some sort of weird mix and match thing. Like, Seager might DH sometimes. Turner might DH sometimes. Who knows? But I still think it's less, it's more likely Seager signs elsewhere, but it's more likely that he signs with the Dodgers than I would have thought at the beginning of the postseason, because he's been really good.
Eric, I'm sorry I buried the lead. I think the most pressing question on the top of every Dodger fan's mind is, who the hell is Andy Burns? Who's Andy Burns, and why is he getting at bats in the postseason? I don't think he took a single at bat in the regular season, did he?
He actually played 9 games for the Dodgers in June. But you're right to, like, wonder this, right? Like, this is how, like, we talk about, like, the Dodgers have all this depth. Like, you know, they so much depth where they had, you know, Jock Peterson is still fighting for the World Series berth with the Braves. Kike Hernandez is, like, leading the Red Sox to a near World Series berth with the Red Sox. And now, like, they have literally Steven Souza Jr. and Andy Burns on their postseason roster. And the reason Burns is there is because they valued his, like, infield defense. And I assume because he hits right-handed, because they have a more lefty bench on some nights. But it's weird. I think a part of it, well, and also they put him on over Billy McKinney, who I thought was going to be the guy, because they like his defense, at least as a late inning guy in outfield and first base, but he also can't hit. So that was probably part of it why they didn't put him on. But yeah, so Andy Burns, 30-year-old, he played in the majors in 2016 very briefly with Toronto, and then played in Korea for a number of years, and then came back recently and then signed a minor league deal with the Dodgers. He was a non-roster guy in spring training, hit for a little bit with AAA. They called him up in June for Yeah, he only played 9 games. So his first game back was his first major league game in 5 years, and then it was a blowout, so he pitched at the end of it. So it was a very weird night.
Perfect.
And then he went they optioned him to the minors, and then at some point in July, they designated him for assignment, but he was already on the minor league injured list because he had a broken wrist. And then by September, he came around, and he was healthy again. So he just – and he's been hanging around on the taxi squad just as a, you know, in case they need type of a guy, and they didn't maybe think they would need it. But since Turner went down, they opted for the right-handed bat, the infield defense, who's played a little bit outfield too, so he has some utility there. But, I don't expect him to play a ton, but like you said, he already got an at-bat. Which is one more than I would have guessed. So here we are.
So going into game 6, we know that Scherzer's on the mound. We talked about that. Ian Anderson for Atlanta. Now, Albert Pujols has been big. He was huge last night. Even if he's not getting power numbers, he's getting on base. And that's, you know, that's a revelation for this Dodger offense. He's almost been like a catalyst for them when he has played. I know Anderson's a righty, and they like having Pujols against lefties. But if you put Pujols at first, you obviously have improved outfield defense with Cody Bellinger instead of Gavin Lux. Do you think it's possible that they would consider leaving Pujols at first base for game 6, even though he'd be facing against a right-handed pitcher?
No, I don't. Like, he was very bad against righties this year. I think it was either 499 or 500 OPS. Almost not playable against righties. So I think his role is pretty defined. You know, just in the mash lefties, like obviously there'll be some situations where it's unavoidable that he faces a righty if a, you know, sort of a switcheroo comes around late. But his sort of role is lefty master. So I think what'll happen in game 6, the lefties come back and play. So Taylor's kind of, going to take over at third for Turner. So you go back to the Cody Bellinger, I think, going back and forth between first and center, depending on who's on the mound. So I would imagine Bellinger's at first against Ian Anderson, and then I guess Pollock and Lux in the outfield. You know, Pollock's like sort of hit his way back into playing time, and he didn't really have, you know, discernible platoon splits. So maybe he plays at least against one of the righties this weekend, or it'll be interesting. Like you would think, I always think like at some point Matt Beatty, it could get another start, but I'm not sure they would necessarily do it in an elimination game. But yeah, we'll see. Like I don't think Pujols is going to start first. No.
Eric, do you believe that Atlanta has to win this in 6? Because if it goes 7, they're going to break once again.
I don't know. Not really. They're at home. They're still in like good shape. Sure. In that regard. I felt bad because like when the Braves had their like a couple players and then Brian Snicker, the manager, come into the interview room last night, it was like just so many questions and. They weren't like bad questions, but you just felt for the players because they were asking them about 28-3, and that's a Falcons thing, right? But I know it's an Atlanta thing, but that's how much weight is on like the city of Atlanta in regards to its sports teams. They all know like how cursed they are, and the players are very well aware of it. And like they were, I mean, you could tell it's something they have to deal with a lot. So I would imagine it's a huge weight on their shoulders to get off kind of like last year with the Dodgers, right? They hadn't won a World Series in 32 years, and they had to hear about that every single time.
800-pound
I'm sure it's
gorilla.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. So, but like you said, home games, so they're in a better position than, you know, say playing a game in Texas with like limited fans and with a good majority of fans rooting for the other team like they were last year with the Dodgers. So, it'll be interesting, but yeah, I don't know if they have to win in 6, but if they do lose game 6, you could just see like the vultures sort of swirling a little bit, and you could, I think more in the stands, people are going to be like, really, we're going to do this again, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, I just felt bad because it seemed like not every other question, but there were so many questions about like how Atlanta's cursed. How 28-3, how you guys haven't been to the World Series in like 22 years and all this stuff. So it was like, oh man, these guys have it rough.
Yeah, I'll refrain from mentioning the national title game when they were beating Alabama at halftime, and Alabama put in a true freshman and beat them on a walk-off fashion. I won't bring that up to the city of Atlanta and Athens either.
Hey, the Hawks weren't supposed to make the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They stepped up.
Baby Hawks, baby steps, I guess. At Eric Steven is where you can find him on Twitter. Does it big for SB Nation and True Blue LA.
And don't fuck with the Thrashers. Do they still exist? Or?
Yeah. Eric, thanks so much, and hopefully we're talking to you next week when the Dodgers in the World Series.
I always love to do it, and the Dodgers only need two or more wins to do it. So I'll talk to you later, guys.
Sounds good. Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, always fun, guys. Have a good one.
All right.
Thanks, man.
All right, we'll talk to you.
All right, Eric Steven.
Yep. We got a voicemail to get to before we check out, Adam. 949-478-1197. Now, this voicemail came in – oh, my God. This came in on Monday night after we did the podcast – or before we did – on Monday, excuse me. Yeah, after we did the podcast on Monday morning for our six-pack. So
hopefully they listened up.
Yeah, so this could be – if it's Dodger-related, it could be extremely dated. So let's see what we have.
What's up, guys? Peter from North Dakota here. I was at the Broncos-Raiders game, and – there's a lot of Raiders fans. It seemed like everybody got paroled the same week. But, man, that was a rough game. And I do love the Raiders, but it was a scary-looking crew. My buddy was looking for a Raiders fan without a fucking face tattoo. Hard to find one. Scary-looking crew. The Broncos look much worse than what you said. I mean, Teddy Two Gloves with Teddy Turnover, and Teddy can't play fucking football. It's an anemic offense. The Broncos look bad. I'm not a Broncos fan, but I went to see a game. Not great. Speaking of looking bad, how about them Dodgers? Holy fuck. Hey, Adam, how are all those decisions going, bud? I mean, it's a silly thing when Matt Money Smith is the only one speaking the truth, but every dumbass decision they're making, there are consequences to it. It's different from Kenta Maeda. We have six starters that work, and Kenta Maeda might be able to come out of the bullpen. It's a different thing from that. There's nothing going on. There's nothing going right with the way they're managing the bullpen. It would be better if the offense could do something, but of course they got rid of every good clutch postseason player because why not? Why not be cheap?
Well, I will say, Peter, thankfully Teddy Bridgewater played much better against Cleveland last night, so at least he has that to hang his hat on.
You know, I've tried to be fair with Dave Roberts and not just blame him for everything.
You have been. I think you gave him credit for
which
how he managed
the entire
game five.
Point.
Yeah, you gave
I
him
liked
credit.
The opener.
Right.
And it worked.
Yeah.
And to just put everything on him
is ridiculous, by the way. And I'm glad that Eric Steven brought up the fact
he talked into the opener in Game Five by the front office.
Yeah, he said only. He basically said they asked him like, "How many votes do you get when it came to this decision?"
He's so oversimplistic.
I got one vote. You know, kind of alluding to the fact that you know what, it's probably against what I'd rather do, but I got one vote in a room full of a lot of people, so that's how it shook out.
I said I didn't like Gratterall coming in before Urias in Game Five. I criticized that part of it, but.
Us were fans of Urias coming into Game 2. We haven't had a chance to talk about it on this show or react to it, but I certainly wasn't a fan of taking him out of his routine that he was in this year as a starter and throwing him in that situation that he hadn't been in. When you have a back end of a bullpen, Blake Treinen was in there before him, had only thrown seven pitches, and was rather clean getting the last couple of outs of the seventh inning. He could have easily come back out for the eighth.
I came in here, I was hanging out at the studio, when it happened, Tim Cates and Colin Yee were hanging out watching the game. Cates was doing post-game, and I said, what are they doing?
Yeah.
He's starting Game 4 still, right?
Right.
And he did.
Yeah.
But, you know, the velocity was there, as Dave Roberts did say, but the location wasn't. And I'm wondering, just because you have the velocity, if you're having to overextend yourself to muster up that strength – that might be when you lose that precision and location.
And one thing Vasse talked about, too, coming out of that game is that a lot of the Atlanta players said that the ball was flat and that it didn't have as much movement on it. And I think a lot of times, sands, you know, as hard as you can throw, I think that's where Gratterall has made strides, because the thing that Vasse talked about last year with Gratterall, he threw 101, but it was straight at you. And a major league player can crack that anytime. Now there's more movement on it, and it's harder to get him hit. So if it doesn't matter if you're throwing 102 miles an hour. If the players know that it's coming straight at him and it's on a straight line, it makes it easier to hit. And that was a problem for Urias in Game 4.
Yeah. So there have been some decisions I've liked. There have been some I haven't.
And even with that, by the way, and I agree.
It is ridiculous that people are going after him using Max Scherzer at the end of Game 5 to close out that game now. And nobody said shit when it happened. And they're like, oh, he shouldn't have been out there in Game 5. Well, if he's not, maybe somebody else gives up the hit.
Exactly. If it's Jansen, who to his credit, Jansen has been spectacular the last month. He even headed into the playoffs, and he's been great in his few appearances so far. You could have used him in that spot. Some will say you should have, but again, to your point, no one criticized it at the time.
How about going case-by-case basis with moves and not just saying all are good or all are bad?
You know what? I'd say like 90% of this wouldn't matter if the Dodgers' offense was like half of what they have been during the regular season. The Dodgers' offense is, I don't know if it's historically bad in the postseason, and maybe it is for a team that's made this deep of a run in the playoffs, because for them to score two, they had played 10 playoff games going into last night and scored two runs or fewer. And five of them?
They got shut out
That's
by the
stupid.
Giants how many times?
That makes no sense. Twice in that series. That makes no sense. Dave Roberts ain't swinging a bat. He can't control that. That's not a managerial issue. That's a player's issue.
And that has been the biggest issue.
Yes.
And it's on the players.
Yes. So, yeah, Dave Roberts ain't perfect. And I think we have been kind of on the forefront of being highly critical of him over the last 5-6 years more than anybody.
Yes.
But
I said he's still better than Donnie Baseball, but that's not exactly a ring endorsement.
It doesn't say a whole lot, you know.
But frame it however you want, like they frame pitches, huh, Peter?
And look, teams, by the way, the putting in starters at the end of games, am I the biggest fan of it? Not necessarily, unless you need to, and I will give Peter credit on that. Again, the Dodgers not in the spot where they have, by the way, if anything, it's the opposite effect. They have a dearth of starting pitching. You got three guys you're riding with right now. You can't afford to put guys in high-leverage situations, especially if they haven't been there all season long, like Julio Urias. I'll agree with that for sure.
Yeah.
But if you need Scherzer at the end of a game, knowing it's going to be 3 days rest going into his next start, and he only throws 12 pitches, you wouldn't think. That tells me there were issues with Scherzer's arm even before then, and he just didn't say anything.
Look, the bottom line is, if they don't win it, if they don't get out of this series, it just proves that last year's championship deserves an asterisk, and that's that. Oh, sorry.
Right.
I'm kidding somewhat, but
no,
they're falling apart during a 162-game season. I'm just saying.
I mean, and there's some circumstances you can't – Max Muncy can't control a guy running into his wrist and breaking it on the last game of the regular season.
No.
I mean, that's not a wear and tear issue. Kershaw's injury problems, absolutely.
Scherzer being worn down, Buehler being worn down like they're Mark Pryor and Kerry Wood.
Well, look, and then look for Buehler and Urias, yes, they're young, but this is the most innings that they've pitched in their careers. And to Eric's point, you know, coming off of the 60-game season where guys were built up differently, maybe it's affecting them a little bit. So I'll give them that. I mean, I think there's going to be a school of people. I know there's a school of people who are going to say last year's World Series is tainted regardless. And I think that's a valid argument. So you didn't even play the equivalent of a half season.
Yeah.
So regardless of what happened this year, next year, 5 years from now, if they win 6 straight World Series, there's always going to say, 2020 has an asterisk on it.
Well, to me, it'd be a lot easier to defend if they came back and went back-to-back for the first time since a team did it in the 70s in the National League.
Yeah. I mean, I like to take every individual season on its own merit and its own base. And last year was so unique. I have no argument if you want to put an asterisk next to it for all of time, regardless of how good the Dodgers are moving forward or not. But that's just me, and it's probably just up to your own individual opinion. But thank you, Peter. If you want to be like Peter and leave us a call, 949-478-1197 is the number to call and leave us a voicemail.
How about the Sharks in Colorado, Peter?
Yeah, exactly.
I want info on that.
Don't get bit. Maybe that's what happened to Teddy B the last couple of games. He's been bit. Man, talk about things not going well. Oof. Hit us up on Twitter at KFig1 and at FollowAdamA. Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at FNA Show as well.
I didn't even see the game last night. I didn't even know there was a football game last night.
You didn't miss much.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Clippers and Dodgers, that's all I knew about.
Yeah, you didn't miss a whole lot.
I know we'll be back next week.
Yes, we will.
Monday or Tuesday. Maybe some NFL six-pack, maybe some Dodgers fallout. We'll see.
We'll see how things shape up over the weekend.
Keep you on edge.
Damn straight.
Over the weekend.
Over the weekend, you stupid bitch!
Not that you guys are, but it's great delivery by Farley.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes we are, sometimes you guys are. It's all right. It's cool.
Over the weekend, you know what? You stupid bitch.
If you think we're a stupid bitch, you can call and tell us.
949-478-1197 is the Talk S hotline.
Yeah, let us know. All right, until next week, as Adam mentioned, we'll be back. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week on the FNA Podcast. Have a good weekend.
And now to the scene late last night at an Atlanta store where employees had to remove the Falcons victory shirts from the mannequins. Yeah, and all those championship hats had to be removed from store shelves. Boxes and boxes of merchandise now have to go back. It will not be sold this morning.